Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. We have Kristen Bruce. World where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness. The proud author of Starting from Scratch, A Guide to Feeling Good. This book can transform your teenagers' lives and quite possibly yours too. So welcome, Kristen. Hello.
Hi, Hillary. So nice to be here today.
Yeah, it's great to have you. So, all right. So before we go to the book, we're going to just talk about Kristen and, you know, some of the couple of things that impacted her life and how she, I'm going to assume, got into the field that she's in today. Yeah. So do you want to talk about your childhood?
Yeah. So I think I am in the self-esteem field because of my childhood. It was rocky at times. I grew up in the 70s. So in that era, there were a lot of drugs going on. And so my home was, you know, frequently filled with people doing drugs, a lot of drinking. And I always felt as a kiddo lonely. You know, I had my brother. We did not talk about the things that went on in our childhood until later in life, you know, until I was in college and started therapy and on the healing path. I wish I would have sooner, you know, because maybe I would have not felt as alone in my childhood as I did. But
when you were a child, I don't know if that was normal where you lived to have that going on, but did you ever know, like, if other families had that going on too, if yours was different or?
Well, I think when there are drugs or alcohol or, you know, whatever else could be going on in the families, those were the two biggies for mine. I think you kind of unconsciously don't share those family secrets, you know. Mm-hmm. I remember in third grade, so I kind of was, stayed to myself. I was always really good in school. And I was the girl that I would stay after during recess and help the teacher, you know. At that time, there were chalkboards instead of dry erase boards or smart boards. So I would erase the chalkboards or, you know, do things for the teachers. I had a couple friends, but I spent a lot of time, I think, not making friends on purpose because then maybe they would find out what my home life was. And I remember in third grade, there was a friend in my classroom and I really just loved her and we became best friends. And so I'd always go to her house after school. And she would always say, okay, you come to my house all the time. I want to go to yours. But I never knew what was going on at my house. So I did not want kids over there. And so I always would make an excuse to not have her over, you know, and I never told her, look, I don't know if my family's going to be doing drugs or drinking, or I don't know what's going to happen there, you know, so that's why I'm not having you over. That's why I'd like your house instead. And I remember one time she kind of gave me an ultimatum. She said, you know, either I come to your house or we're not going to be friends anymore. And I kind of beat around the bush and, you know, skirted the issue and said, let's just go to your house after school. I don't really want to go to mine. I have more fun at yours, or you have more toys, or, you know, whatever the excuse was I made. And she said no. And the next day at school, she wouldn't talk to me. So I lost a friend because I didn't have her, you know, and reasonably so. She had no idea what was going on. But my fear of losing a friend because of what was going on in my household, I lost a friend anyway.
Yeah.
Know? So I could have just been honest with her, but mm-hmm. now you have those family secrets that kids don't want to tell.
Was it shame or fear or like, what do you think that was?
Yeah, there was a lot of shame. You know, my family's doing not good stuff, so that's going to be reflected on me. Or I'm bad because my family's not doing good stuff, you know?
Were both parents doing it? Like in the home, like you would see them doing it?
So they drank openly. You know, the alcohol wasn't hidden. The pot wasn't really hidden either. The other stuff was done on the weekends after we went to bed, you know, but sometimes I'd get up early on a, you know, a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning and go in the backyard and there would be, you know, white powder on the table or, you know, so I knew what was going on. And just because the kids are, you know, air quote, asleep, mm-hmm. doesn't mean they don't know what's going on, you know? So the harder stuff, I think they tried to keep hidden. The alcohol was open. The pot was open.
So like if someone had come over to your house, what would they have seen something, or you would have just been too nervous? Like, would, you know, like what would?
Well, you know, I don't know what would have been in the ashtrays. You know, it might have been cigarettes. It might have been something else. Okay. I think that's probably the worst they would have seen. And, you know, probably at that time, a lot of other families had that going on in their house, too. But you don't know because you don't talk about that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And when I went to her house, it wasn't going on there.
Right.
Cookies and milk and, you know, so it was just different. It was just different. Yeah.
So did you ever try to make a friend again?
I did. You know, I did. We moved not long after that. That was third grade. Fourth grade, I had a couple school friends, you know, and then there were friends on the block. Like there were kids on the block that, mm-hmm. you know, we rode bikes with and we, you know, played hide and seek with or whatever we did outside. They would come knocking at the door. Can you come out? Yeah, hang on. And, you know, then I'd be out and we'd go play. But as far as inviting people into my home, you know, that was, you know, and then there were friends on the block. Like there were kids on the block that, mm-hmm. you know, we rode bikes with and we, you know, played hide and seek with or whatever we did outside. They would come knocking at the door. Can you come out? Yeah, hang on. And, you know, then I'd be out and we'd go play. But as far as inviting people into my home, you know, that was, you know, and then there were friends on the block. Like there were kids on the block. Through high school, I didn't really have people over at my house, you know. Now in high school, it's a little different because, you know, I had a job and had a car. And so we could drive to the movies or drive to, you know, whatever we're going to do. So we didn't really hang out in people's homes in high school. We more right. did out. But yeah, I still didn't have people really a lot at my house.
Right. Okay.
And now it's. Because I love to entertain, but I think it's because of that, you know?
Yeah. So, okay. So now you had said a couple of other things happened when you were a child that kind of impacted you. right?
Yeah. Well, there were, there was a molestation from one of my uncles, and that I didn't share because I didn't know if people would believe me, you know, because he always was bringing me gifts or teddy bears or, you know, things like that. And like everyone loved him. And, you know, when I was backing away, everyone else was go sit on his lap. And, you know, so I kind of kept that hidden until it surfaced in therapy later.
How old were you?
I was probably 7 or 8. I was little. Oh my God. Yeah, I was little.
And did it go on for a while, or was it like once?
I remember a night. But I also remember, you know, sitting on his lap, and then, you know, he'd have his arm around me, and it would just be a little too close to my, you know, chest area. Now he and my aunt divorced not long after that. So I don't think it went on, you know, an extremely long time. But, you know.
Was he not the family member? Was he not the family member?
No, he married in.
Yeah. So you didn't have to see him again?
I didn't see him after that. Yeah. Oof.
Wow. That'll do. So what do you think you made up about that?
So I learned to trust myself, you know. Mm. I think from every heartache, there's a joyful lesson that you get from it, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't trust people, and especially men, for a really long time, nor did I trust myself, you know, and I had to work through that. But I learned that, you know, yes, not all men are great, but there's a lot of really good guys out there, you know, not everyone's like that. And I learned forgiveness for sure. Mm. You know, I did a lot of work around that. But I learned his childhood pain, you know, and what he went through, and everything that was causing him to do that. And he died of alcoholism. So I think he never quite got over that, you know. I feel blessed that I had the courage to find therapy and work through all that stuff, because it made me stronger. Mm.
And did you ever talk to him again, or you just heard about it afterwards?
I heard about it.
Yeah.
I heard about it. Yeah.
So when you say he never got over it, do you mean that, or do you mean his childhood?
Well, I think both. I think he died an alcoholic. So yeah. He for sure never got over his childhood. You know, right. There has to have been guilt that he felt. I do know that he had he did remarry, and he named he and my aunt never had kids together. Mm. But he remarried, and he had a daughter and named his daughter Kristen. So I believe that maybe could have been a turning point for him to say, sorry, you know, did that, but I will not do that to my daughter. And so that had to be torment for him as well, you know, living with the guilt that he hurt a girl, a big child, you know.
Yeah. Wow. Well, good for you. And when did you start therapy? In high school or college, did you say?
Yeah, it was right after college. Like, I had a string of relationships that weren't working, and I just knew, you know, I had friends So there was nothing on the outside wrong that people could see. And I even had a boyfriend tell me, well, there's no self-esteem issue with you, you know. But I think I was overcompensating because really on the inside there was. On the inside, I didn't feel good enough. I didn't feel loved. I felt alone, you know. Mm-hmm. So I started therapy at the tail end of college because I knew I wasn't happy. I was searching for more, I think. Searching for more. You know, I wasn't finding it on the outside because it's always on the inside.
Right. And what were you studying? What were you studying in college?
So I was really good at math. I was a math major for a long time and then decided I'm really good at it, but I don't like it. You know, I don't like it. I didn't want to do that my whole life.
Right.
So I completely flipped. I went into education.
Wow.
Yeah, I completely flipped.
Good for you.
Thank goodness.
Now, so, okay. So did you know that you didn't feel good enough, or was that something you learned in therapy?
I didn't know I didn't feel good enough because, you know, I had the friends in college. I had the group I hung out with. I had the, you know, we went out every weekend and sometimes during the week. And, you know, we had fun like college kids do. Never did any drugs, but I did drink. But I could feel it inside of me that I wasn't happy. You know? And I don't know if anyone else was feeling that because it wasn't really something that we talked about. But it was just something I knew within me that there's more, you know, it's kind of superficial and there's more. And where do I find that? So I was lucky that I had that. I think I just had that inner calling to heal.
Yeah.
You know,
that's amazing at such a young age, you know?
Yeah.
So the therapist obviously helped you to get in touch with all that, right?
A lot. Yeah. She was amazing. She was amazing. And I remember sitting on her couch, you know, that first session. And she said, why are you here? Like, that was her question. She asked me, why are you here? And I said, I don't know. And this is what I told her. And I'm sure she just kind of rolled her eyes and shook her head. But I said, I don't know. This is for other people. I don't need this. I'm good. You know? So I'm sure that was her first clue of, girl, you probably need it more than anyone else.
Yeah. But you knew something was going on. So that, good for you, you know?
Yeah. I think I went because I couldn't keep a relationship. You know, my relationships weren't working out. And so that was the reason that I went, but that was not the reason I stayed.
And how long did you do that, the therapy?
Oh, gosh. You know, still to this day, I do it not on a weekly basis, but still to this day, I have my teachers I go to.
Good.
Help me. So, yeah.
Good. So anything else from childhood before we move on? I know that you said your mom was an alcoholic, but you chose not to go that route.
I didn't want the chaos it brought in the household. I didn't want that in me. Kids drink in college. I drank in college. My friends drank in college. I still managed to, you know, graduate college and be fine. But certainly I could have gotten lost in that.
You know? Did you ever like black out or anything, or you just already like the rest? Yeah. So yeah, it wasn't like a genetic thing where you couldn't have one.
No, for sure. It was not.
Yeah.
No.
Good. All right. And then how, I know you said you went into special ed. Why special ed?
Well, I think I knew I wanted to work with kids and help them. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a calling. Kids, I always babysat when I was growing up, loved kids. Kids have always loved me. I think I just had that calling in me. I don't think I felt good enough to work with the regular ed, the students ed. So I think I chose special ed because of that. I think maybe I saw myself as broken. So let me try to help other souls that other people view as maybe being broken. That could have been going on in my head.
And you did that for 20 years.
I did that for 20 years. Yeah, I did all ages. I did preschool all the way through high school. So mostly the little ones, but I love the big ones too, you know.
And did you love it?
I loved it. I loved it. It was challenging at times. Don't get me wrong. You know, with shaping behaviors is not easy when you're with the tantrums and, you know, that kind of stuff. And there were kiddos who got violent, you know. I hurt a couple times.
You got hurt?
I got hurt a couple times, yeah.
Like badly?
I got my shoulder, you know, dislocated from a student. He got mad and just started wailing and my shoulder went out.
And what happened? Did anything happen to him or you or anything?
I ended up, you know, I did some physical therapy around it. And, you know, that was just part of who he was.
Yeah.
What he did when he didn't always get his way, you know.
You still work with him after that?
I did. I still worked with him after that, yeah.
And he was okay? Did he know what he did? Did he apologize or?
I don't think he had the recollection, you know. He got in such a fit of rage by being, he was pretty violent. He would go after other students. And so I kind of stepped in to help him not hurt another student. And so I got the hurt instead.
Yeah, whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. But you kept doing it, right? You didn't quit.
I kept doing it. I did keep doing it.
And then how did you switch to being a regular kid counselor?
Yeah.
How did you make that move?
Well, so I saw in working with the kiddos that, and also from my own experience, you know, when kiddos come in because they've had an issue at home in the morning or, you know, stuff is going on at their home or they had an issue, maybe not even in the home, on the bus. You know, they got into a disagreement with their friends on the bus and they get off the bus upset. Well, you can't say take out your book and turn to page 32 and let's read because that's not where their mind is. You know, their mind is, they may take out the book compliantly. Sure, they may turn to page 32, but, you know, we all know when we have an issue going on and we're at work, we're thinking about the issue. We're thinking about how to make amends, how to solve it. What could I have done differently? You know, that goes on in your head. So I saw that when I gave kids the grace to work out their problems in the morning, the day went much better and they could focus much easier and they got concepts a lot faster, you know? And
so how did you do that? Were you already, was that when you were with the special ed kids or that was when you had switched?
No, I was still with the special ed kids in special ed. And you know, 'cause no matter if you have a disability or not, you still have, you know, everybody has feelings and everybody wants to feel heard and validated. And they're, you know,
no. Yeah, so those were the kids with the issues. That was when you had switched.
No, I was still with the special ed kids, kids in special ed. And, you know, because no matter if you are have a disability or not, you still have, you know, everybody has feelings and everybody wants to feel heard and validated. And they're, you know, no.
Yeah, so those were the kids with the issues. That was when you had switched.
No, I was still with the special ed kids, kids in special ed, have that flexibility. Mm. You know, they're 9 o'clock reading, 10 o'clock math, 11 o'clock, you know, lunch, 11:30, social studies, blah blah blah. That's where the counselors come in, and I knew some of the behaviors in the regular ed were because of. They didn't get to get their stuff out. And so I wanted to make a difference there. So I wrote a curriculum and switched to school counseling. Yeah.
And was that easy to do, the switch?
Well, those jobs are not easy to come by, you know, not every
day, right?
Yeah, not every school has them, and people, when they get those jobs, they stay. So it took me a while to find a position, you know, and when those positions do open up, you have, you know, you could have 50 applicants for one wow. position. So they're not easy to find, and I was blessed to find one, yeah.
So was it with the same school or a different school?
Different district, actually.
Yeah. Wow. In
different district, yeah.
And how many years? Yeah.
The district where I'm at, they know what they're doing. They have counselors in all grades, not just junior high or high school. They have them in elementary schools, too. I think schools are starting to be more cognizant of the need of, you know, that social emotional help for all kids at all ages.
Mm. Wow. And so how many years have you been doing that?
So 3 years as a counselor.
Oh, okay. And where are you located? What part of the country?
I live in Bakersfield, California, but my school is in Ridgecrest. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Because I'd interviewed a principal of a school who was talking about what you were talking about when the kids got off the bus upset. They could tell. These were elementary, though. She said they could tell. And they were just on them, like, you know, in a good way. Like, tell me what happened. Well, you know, sometimes they visited the home. I mean, they were really all over these kids, which was really great. It was very inspiring to know.
Yeah.
They were so attuned to the kids. Yeah.
Well, they know it makes school go easier. You know, there's going to be less fights, less issues. There's, you know, less defiance. Mm-hmm. Kiddos are going to be more compliant, and it also facilitates their learning.
Right. And what ages are you? You're with middle school, did you say, or no?
I am in elementary school as well.
Oh, you are? Okay.
I have kinder through fifth grade, sixth grade, soon.
Wow. So how do you know? Like, do the kids come to see you at that age, or do you just see them and say, hey, come here?
No, it's a lot of both. It's a lot of, if I see an issue, I'll pull them in and say, come on, we need to talk. Sometimes it's a teacher will refer them, and so then I'll see them on a weekly basis. Sometimes a lot of times the kids will just come. I have a group of kids and they always say, let's go to the counselor to fight. And it's funny because what that means is we're fighting now. Let's go to the counselor to work out our fight. You know, they always tell me we came to you to fight. Okay. And then I correct them. You didn't come to me to fight. You have the fight already. You to work out the fight.
That's hysterical. Well, that's nice, though.
Yeah.
I don't remember having that as a kid. I don't even remember being aware.
I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think
times are different. Do you think things are different now that kids are aware that they can go to you? I mean, I don't remember a counselor. They probably had them, but I just don't remember thinking to go there, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, honestly, I only remember having a high school counselor, and that's just because they made my schedule.
Right.
I had to go to them for schedule. I didn't know, and for college. And I didn't know you could go to them for emotional needs or if you had a problem, you know?
Right.
And certainly, we didn't have them in elementary schools, and I don't even know that we had them in junior high, to tell you the truth.
Right. So I wonder what's different that they would go, you know? Are things more evolved, do you think?
I think there's more issues, you know, than when I was going through school. I think there's more issues. There's certainly way more anxiety and depression with kids. But I also, you know, it took a while to gain the kids' trust and to let them know that I was there for other things besides, hey, I just failed a test, you know. And then I think once kids get an emotional need met and feel better, the word gets out.
Right.
Okay. You feel better. Let's go.
Yeah.
And then they start coming with friends, you know?
Right. That's great.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So we're going to go to our commercial break. And then we're going to come back and talk about your book and the work that you're doing and your program. All right. And
perfect.
So just a word from our sponsor and we'll be right back with Kristen Bruce.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
So welcome back to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. And as always, thank you to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. And we were just talking about social emotional learning with Kristen. And so if you want to bring that to your school, experiential social emotional learning to your schools, contact KikoriApp.com and have a conversation. It really does make a difference. And it's just what we're talking about today. And then also, if you saw my books, if you want a really good summer reading, This is my memoir, The Second Piece of French Toast. You can find it on Amazon. And also, if you're someone like, again, Kristen was talking about, she wasn't one to speak up when she was growing up. Well, me neither. Way into this late age, I learned that speaking up can create a lot of freedom and make a huge difference in your life. That's my book, Real Talk. I have realtalkwithhillary.com. You can go check it out. There's some really juicy stories. And again, you're not allowed to judge me. That's what I say. Okay. And then the third one, my favorite, Your Bullshit is Your Blessing. This is tools and techniques from getting from what I call the left side of life, where everything looks pretty bad, back to the right side, where you have fun, possibility, you create, and you just create a wonderful life. So that's Your Bullshit is Your Blessing. And now we're going to bring back to the studio Kristen Bruce to tell you about what she is up to and her book and how she's making a huge difference with children. Here she is.
Hi. All right,
so let's pick up your book again. It's called Starting from Scratch, A Guide to Feeling Good. And who is this aimed at? What age child would you say, or the parents?
So, well, here's the thing. When I wrote the book, you know, as you know, being an author, it's not just you write it and then you publish it. You write it, you get it edited, you get it edited again, you get it edited again. And so the people that edited it were adults. Now the pictures and the stories are more for teens, you know, what teens are going through. So I would say fifth grade, sixth grade through high school.
Okay.
But the people who were reading and editing the book all said, oh my gosh, I learned so much from this book. It's not just for teens. So yeah, I mean, you know, the concepts are there's no age, you know, there's
right.
no age for going through your feelings or learning to communicate, like, you know, like your book, learning to communicate. There's no age limit on that.
I was going through it. I only got it yesterday, so I didn't get to finish it. But there was a couple things. Communication blockers. So if you want to get this book, it is so thorough. It covers so much. It's got so much in it, right? I mean, I couldn't read it fast. I just couldn't. I tried, but I was like, oh, too much. So I thought communication blockers, I've never heard of that before, but I know people who are sarcastic. So I know we're supposed to look at ourselves. I'm sure I get that way too. But sarcasm, lecturing, accusing, placating, probing, evaluating, solving, and rejecting the feeling are communication blockers. It's like, oh yeah. I've been on both sides.
Right? I've been on both sides too. I have been on all of those. All of those.
Yeah. I know when I don't get my own way or I'm disappointed, I get sarcastic or victimized, you know, and people feel blamed, and then it's like it all goes downhill from there, right?
Well, it's a natural response, you know. We don't want to feel like we did something wrong, or like, you know, so we come back with a sarcastic answer, and that cuts that conversation off, And I had a boyfriend in college. And we that's all we did. We were just sarcastic with each other, you know. And he told me, he's like, yeah, my dad told me that if you're sarcastic, it means you're quick-witted. And at that time, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, you can think of quick, witty little comebacks. But then later, as I started delving into emotions, it's like, oh, no, sarcasm is a way to stop the emotions, you know.
And can be... And it can be aimed at the other person, which is hurtful, you know.
For sure. It's always aimed at the other person, which is hurtful.
Yeah. The other thing, and then I want to talk about your program, but I just put down a couple pages here. It was the boundary one. Wait, that was okay. Some healthy boundaries to you in relationships with others. It's like, I haven't even read them yet. I'm kind of afraid to. I will only allow people to speak to me with respect. If you do not, I will end the conversation.
That's hard.
No, but it's so valuable to know that that's a thing. You know, as a, so I was a, a, people pleasing, pleasant phony. That's why I started getting real with Hillary, so I could be my real self. That's where it all started in 2019.
Yeah.
And so I would just let people talk to me. However, like, I thought my job was to keep them happy. Well, I finally realized after sacrificing so much time and feeling terrible, like, that I couldn't keep them happy anyway. Inevitably, I did something wrong and they got mad and like left or whatever. But, you know, I thought that was my job. So it was such an awakening to know. Wow. And when this girl finally, like, we had worked together and she left, I was just like, wow. When I didn't have such a negative energy around me, I was like, oh my God. Like, I didn't even know. I was so in it. My kids were like, why are you talking to her? And I was like, well, it's my job, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it was literally my job, but eventually I could not. And I just decided not to. And then she left because she couldn't control me anymore. So it was interesting. But, you know, like, you know, if someone's in an abusive relationship, for example, if that's what they're used to, or they're a people pleaser, or they're making excuses for themselves or whatever. I mean, I just heard this woman saying she was in an abusive marriage, but she kept telling herself, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. That's and she stayed until one day she was like, I don't know how, something woke her up and she realized, wait, this is not okay. And I got to leave. Do you know what I mean? Like, what causes that awakening? So I think sometimes we're just not aware, you know?
Yeah. Or we don't want to face it. You know, we know what's going on, but then there's other stuff like, am I going to be alone, or is anyone else going to love me, or, you know, how am I going to survive? Am I going to have money, or, you know, all
it's
those.
Like the best. Yeah.
Wow. Maybe we think it's better to be loved unhealthily than to be alone, which isn't true, you know, but there's a zillion. I've done it too. I've done all those justifications.
Yeah. And I know people who've gotten married. There was one girl, she literally was taking drugs at her wedding. Like, you know, obviously she knew something was wrong, but she thought no one else was going to ask her. So she went through with the marriage. Of course, she had two kids and then got divorced. But, you know, we think there's no one else, or we think we should settle or something, you know? Anyway, all right. We could go down that hole. Really far. Okay, let's go back to your book. And I know this, you know, this is stuff that I never knew. I mean, I've been studying, you know, transformation for like 30 years. But when I was young, I had no idea. I was just doing what I was doing. I didn't know anything. I was fine. That's what I was. I was fine.
I told my therapist, I'm fine. I don't need to be here. I'm fine.
Yeah, I was fine. And then finally someone said to me, well, tell your face. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, I was just unaware. And so I think this is a book that can help people to not have to spend so many years unaware.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think even there's so much in it that the parents could do it with the kids. But my question, I was thinking, you know, how kids, like, I thought you worked with teenagers. So, and I thought this was for teenagers. I guess it's for everyone, but.
It is for, you know, early tweens, teens and up. In my business, I work with teens. Job as a counselor, I work with elementary kiddos, but I still use the same concepts, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, cause I was worrying, but I remember, you know, watching the elementary school kids, they're not worried about being cool yet, maybe in fifth grade, but before that, they're just kids. They're just lovely, wonderful kids. And so I would think this would be easier with them. But as you get to be a teenager and they're worried about being cool and stuff like that, I would be afraid that they would think this wasn't cool. Like, how do you get kids into your program to allow themselves to not, I mean, I'm not saying it's not cool, but do you know what I mean?
So it's funny because all kids, I hear, even as kindergartners, they want to fit in.
Yeah.
You know, they want to fit in. They don't know sharing emotions will help them. And I remember always being in awe over the kiddos who had good boundaries, because it was like, I want to be that. I want to be able to say that, you know, be able to say, no, I don't want to go there, or no, I don't like you, or, you know what I mean? I wanted to be able to set those boundaries. So I think there was a respect for people who were able to openly communicate. And I see that even in the elementary kiddos. Now, it is true that they maybe don't know how to go through their feelings or even what they are feeling sometimes. That takes a little work. But from what I've seen, every kiddo, and I have a line sometimes out my door, they all want to come in and work their problems out. You took the ball away from me and I felt hurt. So it's because they feel better, you know, and that's what's cool about it. And once you see the other person is able to go, you're right, I did take the ball away. I did it because, you know, you hit me with it or whatever, you know, whatever. It's always a two-sided. Mm. And that hurt my feelings. And they talk and work it out. They know they feel better. So then they come back. And I have worked with teens who have been resistant at first and then said, oh my God, this counseling thing, it's not so bad, you know?
And how do they get to you? Like if somebody wanted to do your program, like could a mother tell their kid or the kid has to find you? Like, how does it work? How do they find you for the program?
Yeah, so they can, I have a website. It's, it's howtobehappy.kids. So they can go to my website and put their information in there and then I can reach out, or they can just, you know, text or send me a text or give me a call. It's 714-330-4468. That's on my website too.
So say it again, 714-330-4468. Okay. So you can text her, And how do people find you? Like, besides the show, like, how do you get your kids?
So I get a lot of kids by referrals. You know, kids will talk and then you know, tell their friends, hey, I'm doing this and it's making me feel better. I get a lot of parents, actually, because I've done a little bit of advertising too on Facebook, you know, for kids struggling with depression and anxiety. So parents will call from that. If they see their kiddo suffering from depression or anxiety, they'll call, or, you know, just a general low self-esteem. They'll call me from that.
So the parent, And do you work virtually or just in person?
I do both. I do virtually and in person. I like the virtual, and I find the kids like the virtual because they can just flip open their Chromebook right then and there and log in. And it's in a group. So even kiddos who are kind of afraid to share in the beginning, they can hear stories from other kiddos. And then they're like, oh, yeah, that's me too. You know, and then slowly but surely they start sharing and opening up. So I really like the group format because it lets kiddos know I'm not alone. You know, they're going through exactly the same thing, which is what I wish I would have had as a kid. I always felt alone, you know?
Yeah. So I think, you know, growing up, I remember thinking, like, if someone was in therapy, they were crazy, you know, like, it was like, I wouldn't even think of doing that, you know, but now I think people don't have that stigma anymore. There's so many people who go and it's like a badge of honor almost now, you know, my therapist said, right?
And I just think it's more talked about. And look at, like, you know, the athletes and movie stars are opening up about their struggles and how they got help. And that's really helped to decrease the stigma too, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Because
there's no stigma in wanting to feel better. And everybody, you know, the issues, feeling lonely or anxiety or depression or having, everybody has those negative thoughts in their head, you know?
Right. No, I love that. There's no stigma in wanting to feel better.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You know?
Yeah. And that's the truth, you know?
So with the anxiety and depression, I know a lot of kids, you know, some interns came where I was working and, you know, they were just like comparing the drugs they were on and, oh, I take that one and I take this one. Like, it was just like, I was shocked. Has your work been able to help these kids without medication or get them off the medication?
So I do in my program meditations that really help. And actually the kids will text me, can we do a meditation today? You know, cause they find it helps them so that they feel centered and calm. Mm-hmm. We also do a lot of work with the thoughts because, you know, you think of your most terrible day, you know, or something that someone said to you that wasn't pleasant and you cringe, your body tightens, you stop breathing, you don't feel good. Do the opposite of that. Change it to the best day ever, where people were giving you compliments. Your body relaxes, you feel better. It's about your thoughts. Mm. Yeah. So we do a lot of work on thoughts, and people don't do a lot of examining their own thoughts. But you can, whenever there's anxiety, you can always find a thought that is not helping you.
Mm.
No? So we do a lot of work on that. And kids will ask to do that too. Because it helps them. It helps them.
Yeah. And the same with depression, the same thing?
Same with depression. I had depression for years, you know, and then I started working on my thoughts and was like, oh my God, no wonder I'm depressed. I'm beating myself up all the time. You know, now I'm fine. I'm happy. I'm, you know.
Wow. So you didn't have to take drugs. It was just looking at your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
A lot of thought work. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm all about this going public that we can help more kids, you know. What would be your vision for the world? Let's say 3-5 years ago, if your book got out, if your program got out, how do you see the world as you would want it?
So I see the world as knowing for each individual to know their own importance and sacredness. And when you know your own importance and sacredness, then you can see it in others, you know? So not to say there's not going to be issues, but you're going to not come from anger. You're going to say, hey, this is what I'm feeling. You know, is it true? Or this is what hurt my feelings. What was going on with you? And having those heart communications versus, I'm just going to fight. I'm just going to fight you. My feelings got hurt. I'm just going to fight you. You know, that's what I see. I see a more peaceful planet where we all work together and see everything as sacred and loving. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Oh.
And starts from
then,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, there are some places, I know I've interviewed some people where there is just violence and they just do, boom, dead, you know, like actually shoot people. And it's like, wow, imagine if this could be brought to those areas, you know?
Yeah. Because they're anger. Yeah. They don't know how to get from anger because underneath anger is that sadness. You hurt my feelings. Yeah. Disrespected, you know. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to get there. They just anger back. You gotta go deeper.
Yeah. And how do you see how do you see this getting out, this, you know, what you're doing? How can we get this out?
Well, it's already in a couple schools. I am working on spreading the word, and, you know, I think I'm working on getting it into the prisons and into the juvenile facilities, because it's really needed there.
Mm.
And I think it's also needed in the schools. You know, there's curriculum that the schools have that they call social-emotional, which is more surface. And then there's the deeper stuff. This is the deeper stuff. So I'd like to see this in the schools. So kids start learning it at an early age.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, if you want to bring this into your schools or bring this to your kids, go to howtobehappy.kids and find Kristen Bruce, or you can text her. Make it easier, 714-330-4468. Such important work that you're doing. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. My pleasure. Yeah. My passion. My passion.
Yes, well, you can tell, and you're just so gifted at it. So thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started Getting Real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.